Hi everyone, before we go into the podcast, I just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I'm super grateful for your continued loyalty and support. If you could do me a quick favour, if you could give me a review on Apple Podcasts, it really helps the algorithm and it will help this podcast go up the lists. If there are any subjects or topics that you want me to cover, then please do reach out to me on DM on LinkedIn and I will do my best to find the best guest for that subject or topic. This is the Absolute Business Mindset Podcast, created and hosted by Mark Hayward. This podcast will interview entrepreneurs, business owners, and people in their careers. We will delve into their journey to success, key life milestones, and go deep into their area of expertise. This podcast will inspire and educate with great guests. Get ready to learn from other successes and failures. Today we have Tatiana Sawa, who is a tax and accounting expert, author, and pivot coach. Hello, Tatiana. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks so much for having me on your show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Absolutely. I am doing well as well, so it's all good. I feel like we're coming out of the COVID now. We seem to be on the end of it, and everything is getting back to normal as in London at least. So hopefully, it's the same for you.
Yeah.
Right. So we're going to go straight into the book, and then we're going to jump a little bit around chronologically, just to fill in all of the gaps. But first of all, recently released book called Dream Bold and Start Smart. Tell me a little bit about that, then.
So the book is for someone who has a business idea and cannot afford to fail. Even though there are, you know, in the book, there is a chapter that's very specific to United States taxation. In the chapter, it's actually a fun chapter, but I also talk about the fact that when you, as an entrepreneur or an almostpreneur, if you're in another country, look for the same type of analysis. So this way, you know, it's not really relevant 100%, that chapter specifically, but everything else is very universal and really came as a result of working with small businesses for the last 16 years.
Fantastic. And so when I was doing some research, you were described as a visionary accountant, which I absolutely love. I used to work with accountants, so and most of them are not very visionary. So how did you get that? Would you say that you are a visionary accountant?
I am. I think so, because, you know, I get that question a lot where people say, what is a visionary accountant? And so usually I describe kind of my vision. This book came as a result of seeing almostpreneurs and entrepreneur failures over the last 16 years. And so I've learned from their mistakes. I made notes. I've worked with leaders of different types, of different styles, and in different industries. And so all of that experience really allowed me to see how to do this better from a business perspective, and it's interesting because most accountants don't treat their business as a business, which is a little bizarre if you ask me, because, you know, we are the ones who'd advise other businesses, but we don't treat our business as a business. That's a little strange. And I was certainly there myself up until probably 5 or 7 years ago. And so the visionary comes into play where, when I think about what I want to do with this book and my practice, we don't work with starting companies. We don't work with startups anymore. The reason being that oftentimes they don't have the budget and really no specific need to do certain things that we offer. And so we stopped working with startups. But what I've noticed was every prospective client, which would be an established business that would come to for a consult, for a review, for a second opinion, everyone has been through the hoops of the financial world and maybe lost some money, maybe lost some time, maybe made some bad decisions, maybe made some mistakes. And so I found myself thinking, what if they could start better? What if they could skip those mistakes in the beginning? What if they knew exactly what to do and when? And so I wrote this book as my, desire to bridge that gap and fill that void and help the people who need the expertise of someone like me most. And that's where the visionary comes from. I think that this book will change the world. It will make it easier for folks to start businesses because, let's be honest, accountants don't start businesses. Visionaries do. Oh. And so I want to change the world, and I want to make the life of a visionary who has a vision for a business easier because they'll know exactly what to do, exactly what to watch out for, all in plain English.
It's interesting. When I was doing the research, somewhere it said that accountants usually look backwards. They're doing a tax return of the year before, but you in your business, in your practice, trying to plan for the future. So planning for the future for me is sort of like a financial advisor. You're sort of recommending what you should do with your future wealth. And accountants generally are accounting on the previous year and do bookkeeping and working out what taxes need to be paid from last year. How do you do that role of being an accountant, but be able to look forward part of your business?
So compliance part, so doing the bookkeeping, doing the tax filings, that's absolutely past service. Yeah. However, it's a very important service that every person needs. In the UK, they don't have an annual filing requirement for regular people. In the US, they do. So for, you know, the filing itself has to be done. Mm-hmm. For businesses, for individuals, every individual files a tax return with a few exceptions every year. So that part is a foundational element of the service. However, that's not what people want. Because most people, they don't like to deal with taxes. They don't like to pay someone to file their taxes. They don't like to think about taxes or pay them or anything in between. And so that service, although it's essential, it's not the focus of our business. We do have a compliance department where there are people who do that work really well. Mm-hmm. But what the clients want is really helping them understand how to become profitable, how to be the master of their cash flow, how to price better, how to proactively save money on tax. And that's where the futuristic, looking into the future element comes in. Right. You know, a lot of folks think that, at least in the US, that taxes is something that's fixed. The reality is that it's something that can be managed. However, if you are, we have our tax filing season in once the year is over. However, you know, when you're in March filing for last year, there's not much you can do to reduce your tax bill. It is what it is. Mm. When you're working with a client, you're coaching them. I coach clients how to be better CEOs of their own business, right, from a numbers perspective. Yeah. And also, we talk about pricing. We talk about how to become profitable, how to then, as you're becoming highly profitable, how to proactively incorporate strategies so that you can save money on tax. That's kind of where the advisory part comes in and the visionary part comes in too.
Mm, absolutely. And so let's go back to your jumper end, Louis. Let's go back to your degree. So as you are an accountant, it's maybe no great surprise that you did an accounting degree and you did an MBA as well. Were you always fascinated with numbers and with math and that area? What was the driving force to initially do the accounting degree?
So actually, I'm actually originally from Belarus. And so in Belarus, the law degree is, as any degree pretty much, is a 5-year degree with no other stuff, right? So I actually wanted to be a lawyer since I was about 14.
Okay.
And so in Belarus, I went to law school for 2 years out of 5 and wanted to pursue the same in the United States when I came. However, you know, when I went to college, I, you know, in the US, it's a graduate degree. So after the first bachelor's. And so I needed to do that first. And I needed to pick a major. In the United States, we have to pick a major, right? A concentration. And so I was choosing between, you know, economics, maybe psychology, maybe accounting. And I realized that accounting itself is a skill, just like medicine, just like engineering, just like pretty much anything, because art is also a skill. And so I thought, you know, I was actually working as an admin assistant at the time, and I also the bookkeeper in the business was giving me some things to do in the bookkeeping system. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to go for accounting. This way I can support myself through college and then through law school and get to where I want to be. Now, our college is not really famous for the accounting department. It's famous for nursing and other stuff, but the accounting departments actually turned out to be really interesting because they brainwashed us. If you're majoring in accounting, you might as well sit for the CPA exam, Certified Public Accountant exam. And there are four exams, you know, took me a year to take all four of them. And I thought, maybe I should sit for the CPA exam. I might as well. So somewhere in between those things, and, you know, I was learning accounting in college and then applying it next day at work. I got a job as a bookkeeper, and somewhere it started clicking. Somewhere, you know, when you get good at something, you start liking it more. So somewhere in between, I got to work with small businesses, do their bookkeeping in the trenches. That's what we kind of call it, because bookkeeping is the first step in everything else. It's the foundational element of everything. So somewhere in that process, I kind of saw how different business owners manage, how different industries work, what's reasonable for one, what's reasonable for the other. And so that experience really prompted me to abandon the law school idea and just focus on the numbers. I was always good at math. And so for me, it was a natural step. Although, to be honest with you, to do accounting, you don't really need to know math.
Can you tell me why you moved to the US? I actually
came for the summer. There was a summer program, and circumstances kind of dictated. I met someone and I stayed, and then we broke up and all these different things. But I wasn't planning on it.
For 3 months or 2 months, and then stayed.
Yeah, pretty much. Went to college, transferred credits and things like that. So,
okay, fantastic. But do you still harbor to like the lawyer side of you? Does it ever flick into your mind, I wish I'd taken the law degree instead?
You know, I might one day go for it. I actually passed the exam. I passed the exam to go for law school. It's just 3 miserable years of life. And, you know, I have a family, I have a business. I don't know if I'm ready for it just yet, but I'm taking a shortcut. So in the United States, non-lawyers can take an exam, and essentially if they pass the exam, become practitioners at the United States tax court. So I'm basically a counselor in tax court only. So that's what I'm doing next.
Okay. Interesting. How useful has your MBA been to your, what I've had feedback from other people is that MBAs are really useful for jobs and careers and building a career in a certain area, but not so useful for entrepreneurs and business owners. Would you agree with that, or do you have a different view?
So I'll tell you why I went for an MBA. I mean, I'm glad that I have it, but if I could do it over, I would probably go for a part-time JD, which is the law degree. Although MBA gave me some really great connections and also an interesting insight into kind of the operations of a business. MBA gives you this baseline, because MBA is the same everywhere, right? It has to be accredited by AACSB, which is the accreditation agency. And so you will learn some basics of how to read financial statements, a very needed skill for entrepreneurs. Like, you don't need to go for a degree to get that, but that's something that I noticed. I mean, it was natural for me, but for someone who doesn't have an accounting background, for example, that's a very useful class, and you take that in the first semester, basically. There are a lot of operational things, organizational psychology, But generally, you go for an MBA, not only for knowledge, but you also go for connections, networking, yeah. and a job offer. I went because I wanted to study. I like learning. I'm a learning junkie. So I went because of that. But I've made some really good connections and built relationships with people. Now, one of my classmates is actually my biggest client at this time. He built a really cool business, and they wanted my service, and now we work together. So it
was more. It's developed into more than just a training or a course for you. The networking was what was the biggest, the most important thing that's come out of your MBA.
We'll be back after a quick break.
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
I would put all three kind of in the first place. So relationships, the knowledge. I was good at accounting, but not so much at the operational psychology. And okay. I also took some advanced tax classes as part of that, which was really cool. And also, I guess the education, the connections, and I didn't necessarily get a job out of this, but because I was building my own business, but it's actually two. So education and connections was my biggest takeaway. I don't think entrepreneurs really need an MBA. You can take a course in a similar class in accounting to learn the basics of financial statements, and that would be enough.
Interesting. Yeah, that's the sort of feedback I've had from other people that have done MBAs and become an entrepreneur or were an entrepreneur. So your initial roles after your degree was some quite traditional accounting roles in New York, wasn't it? It was I haven't written down the actual roles, but what did when you moved and did those traditional sort of pure accounting roles? Did I think you said earlier on that there was like bookkeeping and understanding the business and everything? Did you enjoy that, or was that a rite of passage that you kind of needed to go through to get to something else that might be more interesting?
You know, bookkeeping is kind of looked down upon by accountants and professionals, and often business owners too. But I've certainly had my love-hate relationship with bookkeeping, since the start of my career. But in the last 5 years, I've actually come back to love of the bookkeeping because I started offering CFO services, controller services. And so I realized how critical properly and timely done bookkeeping is. Before, when I started out as a bookkeeper, I actually worked with several businesses at the same time, because many of them didn't need me on the regular basis. Many of them just needed a 1 day a week or 2 days a week or something to that nature. And so when I started working with, I started going to school full time, learning actively and working with 4 to 5 businesses at a time, I had my own schedule. I was making great money. You know, you get paid, I don't know if it's true for UK or not, but in the US you get paid a lot more on as a freelancer as you would as an employee. So I was making great money. I was traveling the world. I was doing all kinds of fun things. So, also bookkeeping is something that really carried me through the early days of my motherhood, because as I was building my own practice, tax practice and advisory, bookkeeping was still the service that others needed that I could provide at an excellent level. And I was making great money, and I could do it whenever. I could do it in the evening and spend the day with my kids. And so that was really helpful for me. And so at the time I kind of hated bookkeeping and I hated being called a bookkeeper, but then I realized that it's just such a critical element, and there's so little people that do bookkeeping really well, because to do bookkeeping well, you have to know the accounting basics, and accountants don't want to do bookkeeping. So they think it's beneath them to do bookkeeping. So I started noticing, I've gotten this client who wanted me to update his books every day, among other things. I did other things for him as well. And so I started updating the books because he was looking at the numbers every day. And I realized how critical proper categorization is, how critical timely update is, yeah. And how that drives business decisions for someone like that client. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people often look at bookkeeping as, oh, that's just something I need to get done. No, that's something that will give you data for decision-making. That's mm-hmm. really how important bookkeeping is. And that's certainly the approach that I've adopted since probably 2015 or 2014, where bookkeeping, yes, I don't enjoy doing it anymore, but I see how needed it is and how critical it is for someone managing a business, especially if they hire people and employees and whatever, freelancers, you know, people depend on you. So you have to make sure that you always have enough cash. That's your number one task as a CEO.
Yeah. It just reminds me I need to review my accounting software and just check everything's up to date. It's not up to date. I know it's probably about a couple of months out of date. So I'll probably be doing that later on this evening. So you set up Linzer Advisors. So was that was pre-kids, was that? Or was that? Because where does it sort of fit in chronology with everything else that's happened in your career?
So I've worked as a bookkeeper for about 5 years while I was going to college. And then, you know, I graduated college in January of 2009. And at the time, I don't know if you remember, U.S. was in a crisis. Yeah. And then,
Yeah.
It was a real estate bubble that burst and nobody was hiring. So I had some clients still. And I decided, you know what? I'm just going to take the time, pass the exam, and look for a job at an accounting firm. The reason was that you can't get licensed without working for somebody else for a couple of years. So I wanted to get my license. I always knew that I would go back to being an entrepreneur because being caged is just not for me. So, okay. So I always knew it, but at the same time, you know, I had to suck it up and do it. So by the end of 2009, I found a job at a small firm. And, you know, there's a love-hate relationship with small firms. I think I got really lucked out because for a large firm, when you work, you're part of the conveyor belt. Yeah. You're just building up your ego. Oh, I work for Deloitte or I work for KPMG. That's great. But you work until 12 a.m. Work till midnight.
I worked at PwC and KPMG for about 14 years. So, yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Sorry, go on, carry on.
Yeah, and it's hard. You know, it takes a toll on your health. It takes a toll on your life. And so I, at first, you know, I actually interviewed with one of the big four firms and didn't get a summer internship, not because of my skills. I was an excellent student and everything, but because I asked a partner at an interview what his family thinks about him working so much. And he said, I don't have a family. So that was a fiasco. But that's actually a good thing that this happened because I would have been in that rat race and I would have never been where I am today. And so, you know, I worked for a small firm. On day one, I started working on personal and business income tax returns. I started working on business year end closes and all of those things. And that experience, after about 3 years of that, I got pregnant and so I quit. And I always wanted to quit because, you know, like I said, I'm not meant to be caged. But I quit and started my own practice. I already had some clients that I've carried through, bookkeeping clients, and started adding taxation. And slowly the business grew. But then I also went through some transformation in 2018. I went through some business coaching and things like that and transformed my practice and took it to a whole new level.
Excellent. Fantastic. Well, congratulations. So what you were saying about entrepreneurship, do you think you always were were going to be a business owner? Like you said, you couldn't be caged, but why why entrepreneurship per se that actually, what was it that what that drove you to own your own business and be your own boss?
I think it was a process, and I don't think that anyone necessarily is made for that or whatever. Right up front, it's just I was working as a full-time bookkeeper before, you know, through the first year of college. And then I wanted to make it there. New York State was changing rules for accountants in 2009, I think it was. So I wanted to really take more classes so that I can graduate and be grandfathered into the old rules. And so I started taking 5 to 6 classes a semester, and my full-time job just couldn't accommodate it. I needed to leave early. I needed to come in late. And so I quit the job, and I started looking for like a part-time thing, right? And what I found was that people are willing to pay a lot more an hour to someone who works a day a week as opposed to full-time. Like, and by a lot more, I mean, I was probably making $12 an hour at a full-time job. And as a freelancer, I was making $25-$30 an hour.
Right.
So it was very significant.
Yeah.
And so I found one job. They wanted me for a day, found another client who wanted me for half a day or twice a month or whatever. And slowly I realized that when I manage my own time, I'm much better and much more efficient at it. And, you know, I get the job done and I move on to something else. I can actually travel and not think about what I'm going to tell my boss. So I think somewhere in that period of my life, I realized that being your own boss and being an entrepreneur is a much better setup. And then, you know, once I quit the CPA firm, the first Monday, I think it was, that I wasn't working there, I thought, oh my God, this is great. Like, I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to answer to anyone. So that was really fantastic for me. And from that point on, I never wanted to work for somebody else again.
So true. So you're part of the Profit First community.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in that? Because a friend of mine, the person that I've interviewed on the podcast, who's great guest, Rocky Lavani, recommended Profit First in a very strong way, in that every businessman, entrepreneur should read this book. So it's on my list. I'm listening to one at the moment. It's going to come after that. But so first of all, tell me a little bit about Profit First, and then tell me about the community that you've joined, because you said it's been a bit of a game changer for you.
Well, Profit First, I joined after I've been through other business coaching. That was a game changer for sure. Profit First just added another tool to my toolbox to help clients. So I know Rocky, actually. I interviewed him on my podcast. He interviewed me on his podcast.
Yeah.
So I know him really well. He's part of the Profit First community. But Profit First book, I'll tell you how I got into Profit First. And it's actually a little backwards from regular, you know, setup where you read the book and then you go for it, right? A client of mine was in the clothing retail business. And so he has his own brand. And I don't know if you know anything about fashion brands or retail brands in general, but you know, with fashion brands, they have a couple of collections a year. And typically August and September are the lowest cash months, because you have to pay balance for the fall collection to the factories, and you have to pay the deposit for the spring collection. So usually the cash is really down in September. For about a month or two. And then so this client of mine, it was my biggest client, in the year that we started working together, earlier that year, he made a couple of bad decisions. And I don't mean bad with a judgment attached to it, not at all. Just not sound business decisions. So he decided to renovate a store, invested a lot of money into that renovation. But at the same time, his spring collection didn't do well. And so he spent all this money, but then the revenue didn't come as he expected. So by September, he had to borrow. And I think that by the time we started working together, he was up to almost $1 million in debt. And so he probably a year into or 2 years into our relationship, he texts me one evening, and he says, Tatiana, I read this book, Profit First. It was the earlier version with the piggy bank on it. I read this book. We're doing it. I've set up two accounts for taxes and for production, and we're doing it. Start transferring money every day. So so we don't wait until the 10th and 25th with this client. So a year later, he stopped borrowing in September. He started paying off his debt. 3 years later, he was down to about half. And then sometime in April of 2019, I think it was, I read Profit First and I was like, oh my God, this makes so much sense. And I texted my client and he said, where were you 3 years ago? So it was actually an interesting experience. I read the book, I reached out, and I joined pretty much immediately because I saw how that system changed a client's business and life. Mm-hmm. So it's a system that, you know, you set up five accounts, two more at another bank. I don't necessarily follow it to the letter in a sense that I adapt the system to the client. The classic setup is that you make just sort of transfers on the 10th and the 25th of the month. So every 2 weeks or so, and tie your bill payment to those same dates. And I, for this client, doing it daily worked better because he was getting paid daily. He was, you know, the sales were coming and he was getting paid daily. By the 25th of the month, he would have to transfer a lot of money, which he, you know, which would be a lot harder. So we started with a couple of percentages and started kind of transferring every day and started putting money away for production payments and things like that. And that was really transformational for him. And I started applying it to other clients. I saw how transformational it was for real estate agents, for example, that, you know, show real estate and whatever. For them, the 10th and 25th also doesn't work because they may not get paid for 3 months. What are you transferring on the 10th and the 25th that you only get paid once every 3 months?
Yeah.
So for them, I usually just do a transfer setup as soon as they get their commission. They get the commission, they make the transfers. That's it. And so I adopt the method to the client and have really seen a lot of transformations. Because if you just follow the classic Profit First, you often will find yourself... and I've had clients do that, borrow from your tax account or your profit account, you know, to cut corners. And so that's why I try to not make it 100% classic at the start, because the intention is there, but the reality often isn't.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I will definitely read that very soon. I'll get on to that. What are the five critical steps for someone who's starting a business when it comes to finances, money, taxes? What are the critical steps that someone who's starting a business needs to think about?
I think that the most foundational step, critical as well, is to not ignore it. A lot of entrepreneurs, when they start out, they kind of set the money aspect aside and think, oh, I'm just going to deal with it later. Or someone else will deal it for me. I'll hire somebody else to deal with that for me, without really understanding the depth of the information that you can use to be a better business, to be a more profitable, faster. And so I call it, you know, don't fake it till you make it, face it and face it early. That's their foundational starting point for me, at least. Certainly the pricing, how much do you charge is everyone's question. And I actually went through a price psychology training a couple of years ago, and I was just fascinated by how you can use price to not only sell more, but also to have a better business. Certainly making sure that you're aware of what your obligations are in terms of filing taxes and keeping records and things like that. Knowledge is power. If you don't know, it doesn't really take the responsibility off of you. It just makes you ignorant. So those are some of the basics that I think are important.
I think it's really interesting you say, like, don't ignore it and you need to face it. I think that's one thing that that business owners, especially starting a business, sort of think, oh, well, it'll work itself out eventually. I'll have that next contract. I'll have that next project, whatever it is. And then it will be okay. I think we all need to sort of take a leaf out of your suggested book and do that, because I know. So I left my corporate job October 2020, and so set up with an accountant, set up the companies that I work on, and it is one of the things that you kind of just think, oh, I'll do it tomorrow, or I'm not a procrastinator. I don't procrastinate with my business, but that I just think, well, it would be done tomorrow. And the good thing is I've got a very good accountant who keeps me in check and does that. So anyway, so tell me about your podcast. You're a co-host and you host your own. Tell me about that as a fellow podcaster.
So the Anything Would Work podcast is just conversations with a millennial. Someone I know is a millennial, and we have very different takes on different things. And so we just have conversations about life things, life insurance, cars, homes, that kind of stuff. So that's just something that, you know, is interesting to listen for someone who's not a millennial to get their perspective. And someone who is a millennial to get my perspective on things. And so that's a fun one. And then my second podcast is just mine. It's called Talk to Tatiana. And then on that podcast, I interview people who have gone through entrepreneurship, whether it's a short period entrepreneurship or a long period, and have an interesting story, have maybe some lessons learned, mistakes made, that kind of stuff. And because I want to inspire people who are listening to start businesses, to learn from others' mistakes and to do it better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you said a little bit earlier on that you started getting business coaching. I know we're jumping around a bit, and that might have been a little while ago, but so tell me, what did it actually change? What actually was the game changer when you actually working with a business coach?
I've had reservations about a business coach because as accountants, we have huge egos. And so I thought, what could a business coach possibly teach me? And so I was hesitant about it, but actually my coach, there were two coaches, an actual accountant and a business coach. And they have a program together where they coach other accountants how to have better lives in their practices. And so what I did was I actually attended a free session that they threw in, and I was impressed. I mean, the business coach shared a number of strategies that I thought, you know, it sounds so simple, but yet I'm not doing it. And kind of, I was at a point where I had a pretty established practice. I was making some good money. I don't want to say great money, but I was making some solid money. I was running my own life. I was working very little, meaning outside of the filing season. But I thought, you know, but I was actually busy when I was working. I was busy, but my bank account didn't increase proportionately. Because, you know, as accountants, and it applies to other professionals and businesses too, I didn't charge for everything that I was doing. I didn't know what to charge. So when I left the accounting firm, I had a really cool mentor there. He was a senior guy. He was retiring soon and stuff like that. And so he liked me in the sense that, you know, he helped me a lot, mentored me. He liked my questions. He liked my inquisitive mind. And he was on my speed dial for a few years in the beginning for, you know, with questions, but he said, you know, I asked him, how much should I charge? And he said something like, come up with an hourly rate and, estimate how many hours it's going to take you to do this tax return. And that's it. That's your price. And so I did that for a few years, but then what I ended up with was a lot of clients, a lot of work, and not a lot of money. I was doing stuff that's customary to do for clients. They pay you $600 once a year, and then they think that they own you the rest of the year. They can send you quick questions and take your time, and you feel obligated to serve them because they're your client. So for me, that was the hardest part of the business. And I didn't know how to do it better, to be honest with you. I thought that this just how the accounting industry is, and that's it. But now I know that it's not how it should be. So, you know, when you think about it, accounting service is a lot more than just filing stuff. And like I said, people hate dealing with taxes and all of those things. And when we as accountants sell them that, they hate paying us for it because they feel that it's, you know, painful and unnecessary, but something that they must do and they can't get out of. So I went through this technical coaching where I learned about proactive tax planning. It's a different skill. And I started looking at a tax return. Someone comes in with a tax return, prospective client. I started looking at it as opportunity to put more tax money back into your account. Once that perspective shifted, I changed, but I couldn't just do it all on my own. So this business coach and his co-coach, they had this program for accountants, and they taught me how to be efficient, how to set up systems, how to use Loom or any other screen sharing tool to record short videos so that you don't have to repeat yourself with staff or clients. How to set up a structured week. For me, that was a game changer for sure. So like now, for example, I work on my business. It's my dog. I work on my business Mondays and Thursdays. If you want to talk to me, it's either Monday or a Thursday. Right. That's it. And so other days, Fridays, I try to take off. Well, not this week, but I try to generally take off and either or connect with other accountants, you know, talk about tax developments or something like that. Tuesday and Wednesday, last year I worked on my book, courses, and other things that were not accounting firm related. So that's what changed for me. And also they helped me develop my offer. It's amazing how accountants of all people can't develop their offers right. Now I have menu pricing, I have three levels of service. The hours that I spent with a client are limited by the level that you pay for. And that has been really a great game changer because now I don't take every client that comes through the door. Now I'm very selective. I have to be able to provide value to you. And if you're making less than a certain amount, there's just no value to be generated in terms of a tax. But also if you're a business and you don't know how to manage your numbers, you need another service from me. So you also need to make more money to be able to afford it as a business expense. So that's kind of a long answer to your question. That's kind of the transformation that I went through, and it just tripled my revenue within a year. And now we're very selective. We actually want to work with less clients as opposed to more. And when you work with less clients, you actually feel more, I don't want to say accomplished because that's not the right word, but more fulfilled. Because you see the results of your advice, you see the results of your work in a client success.
Absolutely. I think that's fascinating that the impact that a business coach can actually have on a business. I think that's fantastic. You've got a program. I've got here Something That's Yours, which is about confidence with numbers. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a course with some support on the back end. It's a course for someone. It's based on the book. It just goes more in depth. There's some more coaching involved for someone who wants to start a business, just to know kind of what to do first, what to do second, where to go next, and what to keep in mind along the way so that you don't end up a business that's just chasing cash all the time and working a lot.
Okay, interesting. So what's the future plans? What's the next 2 to 5 to 10 years for Tatiana?
Well, this year taking the exam, let's hope that I can pass it. It's a very tough exam to pass. Then I'll be able to offer even better advisory for clients because I'll know if I can defend a certain tax position in court. You know, United States tax law has a lot of gray areas that are subject to interpretation. So I want to be able to confidently interpret it in the client's favor, but not to cross the line,
yeah,
you know, where it becomes illegal. So that's the next step for me. I just hired somebody to handle the compliance department, someone who's very senior and very experienced. And so that I can focus on the courses, the education, the book promotion and everything else, and tax planning as well, because that's a fun part. The coaching is the fun part of the job. I mean, most accountants hate the basic stuff that's compliance anyway, but it has to be done. There's just no way around it. Mm-hmm. So even if you hate it, you can't get out of it. So now that I've hired someone senior, I will have more, even more time for me and for the things that I want. Because, you know, when you work with clients one-on-one, yes, you're changing their lives, but you can only work with so many because time is limited. Yeah. When, you know, when with this book, I can change the lives of many. And that's really what I'm excited about and the impact that I want to have on those who are just dreaming about becoming an entrepreneur. Then maybe there's going to be a place for the second or third book. So we'll see.
Interesting. Okay, we're coming to the end of the interview. I ask the same six questions to all of my guests. They're quick fire questions. They don't need a quick fire answer. Just whatever you think is the right answer. Okay, first question is, what's the best decision that you've made?
Investing in a business coach.
Oh, interesting. Okay. What's the best piece of advice you've been given?
I've been given advice to leave choice for myself for later. So when you make a choice today, let's say I want to go for a degree or want to work and get certified in something else, I want to make a choice so that I later have a choice again. So that's kind of why I chose accounting as opposed to economics as a major, because I thought accounting major includes courses from economics as well. But, you know, if I don't want to be an accountant after I graduate, that's fine. But I'll have a choice. It's going to be my choice. Right. As opposed to being stuck with an economics degree and not really having a skill.
Right. Who's helped you most in your career?
Teachers. No question. And there were teachers of different kinds.
Okay.
There were just people. There were actual professors. There was one professor in accounting that she's probably the reason that I'm a successful accountant. Once in class, in her first class, I took five classes with her. She said, excellence is a choice. So is mediocrity. And so I thought, I don't want to be mediocre. So that's probably the most influential person in my career.
Awesome. Do you have any regrets?
I don't. I try not to have any regrets. I think that I need to trust God or universe or whatever more, because everything that has happened that was negative in my life was actually one of the best things that happened to me.
Right, right. It's absolutely true. The hardest things that happen to you often turn into positives. I totally agree with that. What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of my kids. I could afford to be home with them more and to raise my own kids, which is something that not everyone has the opportunity to do. So that's really what I'm most proud of.
How old are your kids?
My daughter is almost 9 and my son's 6.
Okay. So still quite young. Still quite young.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. What does legacy mean to you?
Legacy means impact. I've certainly been fortunate to have been impacted by a lot of amazing teachers and just mentors in my life. And legacy for me means kind of returning the favor for the future generations, not necessarily future, distant future, but like even other colleagues, even other friends, and helping them see what I see and helping them realize how we come on earth to not just live, not just survive. There is higher mission, not mission, but more like higher, I guess mission is the word, for everyone. And for me, legacy means exactly that. What was it that I was meant to do for others? And the book is certainly my way of doing that.
Awesome. And lastly, where can people find you if they want to reach out to you?
So my website, talktotatiana.com. You can sign up for the Side Hustle to Business checklist and just read through my bio, my programs, and just everything about me.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Tatiana. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you today.
Mark, thanks so much for having me on your show.
Thanks a lot.